Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. We're going to get on the phones here in just a second. The number to call to be on the air is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. A couple quick things. Pledge drive is over, but boy, what a pledge drive it was. We exceeded our need of $3 million thanks to God's grace and your generosity. And it's over, it's done, but we're holding the door open for you just in case maybe you were traveling or busy or something came up and you weren't able to participate. You still can for a limited time. Just go to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app and you can make a pledge and be part of that really amazing, exciting pledge drive. Also, you can take your Lent to the next level with Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass, which are free to you every single day. Because you loved last year's in-depth walkthrough of the Mass, we have produced even more new, exclusive video content each day that will enrich your passion for the Holy Mass. This premium edition video series goes even deeper behind the scenes from the moment you enter the chapel to the final blessing. From Ash Wednesday to Easter morning, you can illuminate your Lent with daily insights that you'll only find here, right in your inbox. So sign up for Father Rocky's new Lenten Lessons on the Mass today at relevantradio.com/Lent. That's relevantradio.com/Lent, and it will help you learn it, live it, love it even more. All right, to the phones. Let's go to Don in Warwick, New Jersey. Warwick, Rhode Island. Welcome, Don.
Taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering about a book that I received from a woman at church. And the title of the book is called The Warning, and it was very riveting, and the people who wrote the testimonies in the little book about the end of times and visions and illuminations that they had from God, there were about four or five people. The author is Christine Watkins, and I was just wondering what your opinion is of this little book, and it's, I guess, from the Mary Foundation. I was reading... It's sent out by the Mary Foundation.
Okay. Yeah, I've got some. This is a question that has come up before, not often, but a few people have asked about it. So I'll just summarize what I've said about it before. The private revelations to some bona fide saints regarding a kind of warning, an illumination of conscience, where people will have an opportunity to suddenly see their souls as they really are, as opposed to what you might think your soul is like, and to have an opportunity for a profound conversion, and also getting into other things like the 3 days of darkness and other things. So there have been some actual bona fide saints who have said this. So I don't for a moment deny that it is part of private revelation, which, keep in mind, is not binding on anybody. So it would be smart, I think, if when Our Lady of Fatima gives information to the children at Fatima in 1917, like pray the rosary and other things, I think it's really smart to pay attention to that. But as the church says, it's private revelation, general revelation that is incumbent upon all of us, that ceased with the death of the last apostle. So that revelation, we are obliged to heed and believe, etc. Nobody is obliged to heed or believe private revelation, and that's an important distinction that must be made. Nonetheless, as I said, there are certain examples of private revelation where I think it would be stupid not to heed it and believe it, so Fatima being an example. So back to this issue of the warning or the 3 days of darkness, or there are a variety of things that are sort of associated with one another in this area of a future punishment, a future illumination, a future warning, etc. So I, for one, believe that these saints had experienced some sort of truth being given to them by the Lord or by Our Lady, And I personally am inclined to think that this is something that we should not only be aware of, but we should also act upon. So amend our lives. If penance and prayer is something lacking in your life, then you should do that. You should heed that. However, and you knew that the however was coming, this particular book suffers from one specific deficiency that people who are not discerning, or they're not careful in discerning, they might be misled by, and that is, it includes side by side, along with some of these actual authorities, like, say, for example, St. Padre Pio, people who are just self-proclaimed priests and laymen who say, well, I'm receiving locutions or I'm receiving revelations, and the church has not approved them. The church has not said, either at the local level or, you know, at a higher level, that these are reputable, claims, or that they are reputable and worthy of belief in terms of the information that they're claiming. That's the problem with that book, is that although the premise is sound, in my view at least, and some of the sources are sound, some of the sources, I'm not going to say are unsound, but they're at least, they're unvetted. They're not people that the church has said, you can trust this person to tell you the truth. Not because there necessarily is anything wrong with that person, but because these are just people who pop up and say, I'm experiencing these messages, therefore you should believe me. And a lot of it is very derivative. One of the things you'll notice, Don, is a lot of these things, people pop up and they say, well, I'm getting these messages, and they're just simply rehashes of what maybe some great saint had said already. Now, it's not to say that somebody couldn't receive information that is the same or identical, but that on its own is not a reason to believe that somebody is actually receiving locutions or visions or in some way receiving private revelation. So that's one issue. And in my earlier critique of this book, after having gotten it and read it, I didn't want to comment about it until I had gotten a copy and I had had a chance to read it, because that would not be fair. So after having gone through it in my prior critique of this issue, that's one issue I raised. The other issue I raised is that one of the problems that's attendant to this is that some people wind up becoming obsessed with this issue to the point where they become very fearful and anxious and suspicious and even cynical in some cases. I've known some people who have gone to that extreme. And it's because this message is so frightening to them that they wind up obsessing about it to the exclusion of doing the things that they really should be doing, which is to focus your energies on what God has called you to do. So if you're a wife or a husband, a father, a mother, a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, whatever it is that God has called you to do, some people, they become so wound up and anxious and frightened and upset that they neglect to do what they should be doing. And that's a problem. And I can't even remember how many times, I mean, if I had to guess, maybe at least half a dozen times in the last couple of years, people have come to me in a great state of anxiety. I've been reading, you know, these websites, and I've been looking at these videos, and I've been following these alleged apparitions, and I'm just so worried and anxious. And that's not a good thing. That's not from the Holy Spirit either. That spirit of fear, that spirit of anxiety. And that's one of the side effects that I have noticed personally, not just by hearsay. It's one of the side effects that some people do suffer from. And so as part of my effort to be objective in evaluating books like that or websites like that or videos like that, I don't want to, on the one hand, dismiss what in fact may be true. So as I said earlier, some of this is indeed true. I don't doubt that. But for some people, the way it's presented can be injurious. And that's a concern that I think everybody should take into account. So final thought, I'm not saying to anybody, don't read it. I'm not saying to anybody, you know, I think it's bad. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that there should be a proper caution if you're going to read a book like that, to recognize that some of the people who are quoted there have no standing in the church. It's just them saying, this is what God is telling me. Could be true, could be false. That's one issue. And then the other issue is be careful. So you are what you eat. And for some people, when you consume that kind of information, it has a negative side effect. And that's another warning I think that we should be, you know, willing to receive. So those are my thoughts in short form, Don.
Well, thank you very much for answering that question. And I agree with you. So you have to be the observer of your thoughts as you're reading the book and be mindful of how you're digesting it.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're
for
welcome,
that,
Don.
For that.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, I don't take any pleasure in being critical of something. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm not here to judge anybody. But there are things that do cause problems for people. And my view is that if you can avoid an unnecessary problem, sometimes problems are necessary and sometimes they're unavoidable. But getting, you know, morosely obsessed with the warning or morosely obsessed with judgment and things that are real, and we should attend to them, we should pay attention to them, but I feel like I'm repeating myself again, but maybe it's worth repeating one more time, and that is that you have to be careful that you don't wind up becoming imbalanced. That's what I'm driving at. 888-914-9149. Thank you, Don, for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go now to Mac in Davenport, Iowa. Hello, Mac.
Hello. I got a question about a Masonic funeral for a coworker. I know I probably can't, I guess I probably wouldn't go to this funeral, but I was thinking about the visitation. Is it possible just to go to the, it's not like at a Masonic building or anything. I think it's just at a regular funeral home. Would that be okay to still go to just to give my condolences to the,
yeah, sure.
I my coworker.
So. Yeah, so he was a Mason. That's too bad. I sure hope he had a moment of repentance before it was too late. But in any case, if it's just a funeral home, and it's, I presume it's a viewing where friends and relatives can come the day before the funeral?
I believe so. I believe it's, I didn't read anything in the obituary about it being anything different than that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it. Now, I'm not the authority who can make such decisions, but based upon what you're saying, I don't see any issue with going to that.
And what would be the reason for not attending, just for anybody who does, because I kind of know a little bit about the Masons and kind of a little bit of the history, not a lot, but again, like I said, I wouldn't go to the actual temple or whatever they have for their for the actual funeral, but what would be the reason for anybody who's listening, not to go to do that?
Well, the reasons I think could be summarized this way, that Freemasonry is incompatible with Christianity, even though Freemasons will tell you, sure, if you want to be a Catholic or whatever, you can be a Freemason, no problem. The inherent problem is that the Freemasonic worldview, it's a religious slash philosophical worldview, negates or it denies the uniqueness of Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. In other words, in the Freemasonic worldview, Jesus is just another path to the truth. He's not unique. He's not God himself. He's not the unique Savior of the world, which of course he is, but Freemasons say he's not, and they just recognize him or deem him to be, you know, one option among the many other options that are out there. So that's one problem. And it's suffused in their rituals and their oaths and other things where they've taught the initiates that there's something higher and more true than Jesus and his gospel, which is blatant heresy. So for that reason alone, any kind of ceremony that's Freemasonic, just on that one ground alone, to my mind, would be objectionable for any Catholic to go to because it's an implicit and in some cases an explicit denial of the priority of Jesus Christ. So that right there for me would be a deal killer. Now, secondary to that would be, of course, the centuries of open enmity from Freemasonry against the Catholic Church. And I'm sure that there are some people here in the U.S. who are puzzled by this and say, well, my uncle's a Mason and he just does pancake breakfasts, and he just raises money for the community. And that's true. There is a lot of good work that's done at a civic level or helping children who have burns or illnesses, like the Shriners, for example. So there's no doubt that the Shriners and other forms of Freemasonry can do good work in the community. And I think that in the United States, generally speaking, most men who are members of the Lodge, they're not aware of the nefarious history of Freemasonry. They're certainly not aware, because they don't reach the higher degrees of Freemasonry, they're not aware of the way in which Freemasons have actively sought to subvert the Catholic Church in particular. And so just they're just sort of blithely ignorant about it. But when one does become aware of those things, as I have, although I've never been a Mason, I never would be a Mason, that adds another layer of gravity to why I would never participate under any circumstances in any kind of a Freemasonic ceremony. So those two reasons, I think, are sufficient, Mac, in my view, for somebody to avoid a ceremony.
Awesome. I just wanted to say, too, that I saw you at Our Lady Guadalupe over here in Silvis, Illinois, a couple months ago now already. But it was good to see you. It's good to see you in person.
Thank you. How is, I'm trying to remember the name of the parish priest there. He was such a great host.
Father Peter.
Yeah, Father Peter.
He has a kind of a strange last name that I don't, it escapes me right now. But yeah, he's a great dude, man. We love him a lot.
Yeah, no doubt. He was very kind to me, and he spent a lot of time sort of making smooth the paths for that event that I did at Our Lady Guadalupe Parish. So please tell him hello for me, and a big shout out to everybody who was at that event a few months ago. Thank you, Max. I appreciate it. Listen, I have to take a quick time out. We'll take that time out right now. We'll come back to your phone calls. We have lines open. There's another one that just opened up. So we have two lines open. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I will be right back.
Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We are back. Thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, did you know that lifting weights for just 3 seconds a day can improve your muscle strength?
I can't talk to you right now.
We'll come back to that topic. Collect yourself. Let's go to Charlie in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Patrick. My question for you, I have to confess that I don't listen to the show. I am a Christian. I was raised a Catholic. My grandfather was a Mason, and I have a good friend at our church who is a Mason, who's encouraging me to become a Mason. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know much about Masonry at this point. What objections do you have to a Christian becoming a Mason? What are there any pitfalls for a Christian?
Well, I think so. First of all, I don't know if you were on the line and heard what I was saying a few minutes ago, but maybe the greatest objection is that Freemasonry does not regard Jesus as the Savior, as the Messiah. So he is considered one option, religiously speaking, among many others. So in Freemasonry, yeah, if you're a Muslim, great, be a Muslim. If you're a Catholic, be a Catholic. If you're a Protestant, be a Protestant. That's fine, as far as they're concerned. And it entails a rejection of what the New Testament says, which is that Jesus Christ is our Messiah and Redeemer. Now, I'm sure you know Jesus himself said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Freemasonry rejects that. So foundationally, that would be my greatest objection to Freemasonry, but it's not the only one. They also, and as you are initiated further and further, and I would strongly encourage you not to become a Freemason, but if you were to do so, you would be taking certain blood oaths, you'd be swearing certain blood oaths as part of the initiation process as you rise to higher and higher degrees, that in essence, are you swearing that you would not only not reveal the quote-unquote secrets of the Lodge, such as they are, but that you would want people to kill you if you were in fact to do so. So you would actually be swearing that you wanted somebody to commit murder. No Christian can do that. No Christian can swear an oath that somebody else should commit the terrible sin of murder, and so on and so forth. I mean, there's so much there to object to if you ask me, Charlie. Now, I have never been a Freemason, so I can't speak from personal experience, but I have read some books by former Masons, and one in particular, his name is John Salza, S-A-L-Z-A. I would encourage you to pick up either or both of these books. One is called Why Catholics Can't Be Masons. That's the shorter book. And then the longer book is Freemasonry Unmasked. These are published by our Sunday Visitor. You can find them easily online. But he was a 32nd degree Mason. He didn't get to the very top degree, but he was one rung below that. And so as somebody who had been a Freemason for years and understood what was really going on and had been initiated all the way up to the second to the highest degree, he knows what he's talking about. And so in it, he explains not only the nefarious history of Freemasonry, but also the ways in which it conflicts with Christianity. So I would suggest maybe taking a look at what he has to say, because he was a Freemason and he's got a lot of experience and credibility.
Gotcha. Patrick, thank you. That's very helpful. I will look those books up.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you, Charlie. And I hope if you are willing to start listening to the program, I hope maybe some other questions or issues with the Catholic Church can be cleared up. That would be my sincere effort. So call me anytime, Charlie. I'd love to talk to you again. Thank you. Let's go to Ryan now in Phoenix. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. And good morning,
good
Cyrus.
Morning.
How are you guys? Real quick, I just want to make a quick comment and then a question. But man, what a great time in life to be Catholic. Other than that, I had a question, and if you could answer this one quickly, because I have a more important question. But I'm going through Bible in a year, and they were just talking about in John the symbolism of 153 fish caught by Simon Peter, meaning mm-hmm. I am God, or translated to be I am God. Is that objectively true? And then my more curious question was, what's our thoughts or practices or beliefs on free will in comparison to Protestant beliefs?
Okay, well, I'll come back to that second question. So I may need you to remind me of it, but a lot of different interpretations have been given to the meaning of 153 fish. So when Jesus told St. Peter, you know, to go into the deep, this is in John chapter 21, we're told that there was a certain number of fish, 153. And why? Why that number? And so different commentators have had different theories as to what that number means. Now, the church doesn't have a particular teaching to say that it definitely means this, but I have some quotes from a couple of the church fathers here that do opine on this. So St. Jerome says that there were only 153 species of fish in the world. Now, that's what he thought. So therefore, by catching 153 fish, this meant that the church, and this is a way of sort of expressing the church's mission. Remember how Jesus said, you know, you will be fishers of men, he said. He says, right now you're catching fish, but you will be catching men, showing that Peter and the other apostles would be fishers of men in the sense of evangelizing them. So the most common theory that I'm aware of is what's expressed by St. Jerome, and that is that this number represents all the people in the whole world, all races, all places. Now, there are other commentators who have somewhat different views, but I think that the one that's most commonly held would be that of St. Jerome.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, so the second question was on free will. All right, so free will is a component of being human, meaning that because God creates you out of love and for love, there is no other reason for God to create you. He doesn't need company. He doesn't need entertainment. It's not as though he's looking for companions. The only reason that he creates anything is out of love. He doesn't need anything beside himself. So the reason he created you, and is true for all human beings and angels as well, is out of love. And so he enables us as human beings to not only experience his love and receive it, but also to return it. So in order to love somebody in return, you have to be free. Because if you're not free, then whatever it is that you're responding with, it's not love. It's something that's forced. So the Catholic Church's teaching, and this is true, I think, generally of Protestantism, although not entirely, is that, properly understood, human beings have a free will in which God enables us to participate with, to respond to his grace. An analogy that might be helpful would be, if you're thinking about free will, it would be like a three-masted sailing ship. And when the sails are rigged and they're out there and open, then when the wind comes along, and the wind we could think of as God's grace, it's purely passive. It's not as though the ship itself is doing something to move, but it rather it's the wind that is moving the ship, but the ship is capable of moving because the sails are extended. Now, it's not a perfect analogy, but it's helpful, I think, in seeing the interplay between human free will and God's sovereignty. The two are not in conflict. The one does not negate or cancel out the other. So God's sovereignty is in no way minimized or jeopardized by the fact that he endowed human beings with free will so that we can participate with or accept his grace. So that's, you might say, the essence of the Catholic doctrine on free will is that human beings have this capability. Now, it's a fallen free will. It's a wounded free will, and it's an ignorant free will. These are all the results of the fall that we have to contend with, but it doesn't eradicate human free will. And that's how God's grace, like that wind that's pushing the ship by means of the sails, that's how God's grace interacts with us. It doesn't force us. Now, in the Protestant world, there are different views on this topic. And so perhaps the most extreme, and I would argue the most erroneous, would be the Calvinist view that entirely denies human free will. And I mean, they have their ways of explaining it. But the essence of Calvin's view of free will is to deny that it exists at all. Now, prior to that, Martin Luther, he wrote an entire book on the topic called The Bondage of the Will. And so he didn't come as far as negating the existence of free will, but his view was that human free will is so constrained by sin that it's, in some cases, sort of effectively useless. He doesn't go so far as to deny it outright, at least as I understand him. So that would be a somewhat different permutation. But generally, those Protestants who are not affiliated with Calvinism, and to whatever extent they're not affiliated with Lutheranism, so the Baptistic view of things makes plenty of room for free will in a way that would be very familiar to a Catholic. But if you wanted to read specifically what an individual group had to say, you'd have to consult some of their own texts.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And God bless you guys and everything you guys do.
We appreciate it, Ryan. Thank you for that. 888-914-9149. How about Lee now in San Jose, California? Good morning, Lee.
Good morning. Hey, on the topic of Freemasonry, I'm an alcoholic and I attend AA meetings. And some of them are held in Masonic lodges. Is this sinful or wrong to attend something that
is not in a building?
Okay.
Yeah, no, for this reason, I would say, you're not going to the Masonic lodge to attend a Masonic ceremony. You're going there to attend an AA meeting, which is great. And it would be no different than if you were going there to donate blood, because that's where the Red Cross had set up. Or if you were going there to donate Toys for Tots, because that's where the Marines had set up. Your purpose in going to that place is not for anything Freemasonic. Now, if you were going there to participate in a ceremony, that'd be different. But you're not doing anything inherently wrong thereby.
Excellent. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, you got it, Lee. And I hope that things are smooth for you, smoother than they were before anyway. That's good.
Well, 37 years sober.
Cool. Super cool. Yeah. More power to you. Thank you, Lee. How about Al in Santa Ana, California? Good morning, Al.
Tortas, zapatillas, con Santa Fría, mi hermano Patricio.
Claro que sí. Gracias.
Patrick, just a couple of comments. Number one, I took my little family. You know, we live here in your former neck of the woods.
Yeah.
We went to visit family in La Florida. My mom's Cuban, my father's Mexican. I have a lot of family in Florida. And I couldn't believe, I mean, I'd heard, seen, read how things were, life was happening in Florida. I just couldn't believe how normal everything was and how abnormal we are here in California.
Yeah.
Really sad. And it got me to thinking a lot about President Biden. And unfortunately, Patrick, I live with dementia and Alzheimer's, but I caretake very sick and older parents, and my mom has had dementia for 13 years. Hmm. I had a godfather that died of Alzheimer's 5 years ago. I know Alzheimer's. I know dementia. This family of President Biden, his siblings, his wife, his children, they're so selfish. It's all about them. It's always been about them. Always on the coattails of this man.
Let me interrupt, if I may. I have no sway of any kind over the Biden family or anyone else. So I don't want to get into character assassination here. There's no point in that. Was there some point that you wanted to make? Because I don't want to spend time running down people whose private lives I have no effect on at all.
Yeah, my point is simply this, okay? That if you love your family, you'll take a bullet for them, okay? And you don't coattail on people that are sick. And I will just finish with this. Mm-hmm. President Biden is not the same man he was 6 years ago. And my theory is the only good person in his life died. Bo, the one person that did something on his own and was a good man from everything I've read about and did things on his own, when he died, a piece of President Biden died, because that's the same thing that happened to my mother when my brother died years ago. She changed, and it accelerated what was going to happen to her. That's all I wanted to say.
No, I understand. Let me jump in, if I may. I think I understand the point you're making. In other words, it seems very apparent that Joe Biden has undergone a steep cognitive decline. He's constantly confused in what he says. He constantly forgets and seems to be befuddled, and this is a very consistent thing in recent years. So if what you're saying is that you feel as though this is wrong of people, whether his family or whoever, to sort of keep him out there in the public view when he seems to really be suffering, I would agree with you. I mean, everything I can see suggests that he really is not cognitively up to this monumental task of being the president. Even a young, healthy man would, or woman for that matter, would be aged by the experience of being president. I can only imagine. So to have an elderly man who seems to be in the throes of dementia in some ways, it just seems cruel. Like, why are you putting this poor guy through this? Whatever you may think about his politics aside, it seems cruel to have somebody out there doing this job who doesn't seem to be up to it physically and mentally. And if that's the point you're making, I can concur with you. I think many people are looking at this saying, oh my gosh, this is really unkind to him to do this. Now, maybe nobody is making him do this, but then again, given his befuddlement so often, it makes you wonder. So if that's the point you're making, well, I understand.
Yeah.
And I agree.
That is the point I'm making. A lot of people are puppeteering. The poor guy is un títere. He's a puppet. People are shoving. And you know, Patrick, I you can't say this because what has his brothers done? What kind of businesses have they run to have so much money?
Yeah, I don't know. I've read some things that seem rather damning on that point, but that's beyond my ability to know. So I suppose in the end, of course, all of us have to answer to Almighty God for our lives. This is true of everybody, including President Biden. And the time will come. I hope he goes to heaven. And I hope that whatever it is that he has to account for, I hope that he is prepared and cooperating with God's grace. But in terms of our speculation, I don't see how it helps anything to speculate about, his family's business. So I put it this way. Let's leave that up to the FBI, or let's leave that up to law enforcement, and ultimately, let's leave that up to God. Because in the meantime, I don't think there's much that you and I talking about it would do to change anything. But I get where you're coming from. I think a little birdie told me, by the way, Alfredo, that you may be visiting Phoenix at the end of next month when I will be in town. Is that right? Did I hear that correctly?
I have a lot of family in Phoenix, and I have been thinking, but I might be waiting for you to come to SoCal again. I don't know yet.
Well, I have a feeling I will be in SoCal in the very near future. So
copy that.
You know, keep your eyes open and you'll hear about it when the time comes. But thank you for that. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Let's pray for President Biden. Let's take a break, too, and we'll come back with more of your phone calls. Line just opened. You can call now, 888-914-9149. And yes, even though Cyrus dodged it, I'm going to come back to the fact that lifting weights for just 3 seconds a day, they say, can improve your muscle strength. What? I'll tell you all about that on the other side. Yo.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Cyrus, you're a Steve Martin fan, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love him. Yeah.
Do you remember when he was doing stand-up, he had this one bit, you know, how to be a millionaire in 3 easy steps. First, get $1 million. Remember that one?
Yeah, it's funny.
I thought about that when I saw this article for the first time. This is from studyfinds.org. Lifting weights for just 3 seconds a day can improve muscle strength. This actually reminds me also of losing weight while you sleep. Remember that story from last week?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it doesn't. I've tried it. It doesn't work.
Well, you haven't tried hard enough. You haven't tried long enough. But that is actually a scientific study from last week that said that if you sleep an extra hour, the way they have it, the way they say it is that if you sleep longer, you consume less food because you're not awake. And so if you do that and you miss out on the 270 some odd calories that you would have eaten if you had been awake, then over time, you can lose 26, 30 pounds.
I don't know. All my cat does is sleep, and it's really fat. Fat. So I don't understand.
Well, I like the idea of getting stronger by lifting weights for just 3 seconds. And this sounds crazy, but here's what they found out. A new study finds that lifting weights for as little as 3 seconds a day can still have a positive impact on your muscle strength in the long run. Researchers in Australia and Japan found that performing a single bicep curl at maximum effort can lead to a 10% increase in muscle strength in just 1 month. A team from Edith Cowan University and the Niigata University of Health and Welfare studied 39 healthy college students who performed one muscle contraction at max effort for 3 seconds a day for 5 days a week over 4 weeks. These students did their curls in one of three different ways, performing an isometric, concentric, or eccentric bicep curl during the experiment. And I have no idea what an eccentric bicep curl is. Researchers measured each person's maximum voluntary contraction strength before and after the weightlifting program, as well as the strength in a group of 13 students who did not exercise at all for these 4 weeks. Results show that performing just one bicep curl every day led to the greatest increases in muscle strength in comparison to the two other methods. And that would be the eccentric bicep curl compared to the isometric or concentric. These are meaningless terms to me when it comes to bicep curls. I don't know what they're
all right. I am Hans.
And I am Franz, and we just want to pop you off.
But not to worry, because they do give some explanations of this. A professor of medical health sciences, Professor Ken Nosaka, he says the study results suggest that a very small amount of exercise stimulus, even 60 seconds in 4 weeks, can increase muscle strength. Many people think you have to spend a lot of time exercising, but it's not the case. Short, good quality exercise can still be good for your body, and every muscle contraction counts. So what exactly is that eccentric bicep curl? A normal bicep curl involves all three of these weightlifting motions. You can actually break this action down into separate exercises. An isometric contraction means the muscle is stationary while holding a heavy weight. A concentric curl is when the muscle shortens up while you lift the weight up toward your chest, which is probably the classic image of someone performing a bicep curl. However, there is one more phase of the curl called the eccentric contraction. This is when the muscle is lengthening as you lower the arm holding a dumbbell away from the chest. Researchers found that all three lifting methods provide some benefit to a person's muscle strength, but the eccentric contraction actually does the most for the muscles. And there's more, but I won't quote it all to you. It's just interesting. So Cyrus, I can picture it. You say to Melanie, "Hey honey, I'm going to go work out. Okay, I'm done. I'm back. What do you need me to do?"
I like it. I like the eccentric muscle curl. Is that what it's called?
Eccentric muscle curl. Yeah.
So they're not talking about like someone that's eccentric.
No, but I suppose you could be eccentric.
Right.
And it also doesn't mean the 8 ounce curls with a beer can in your hand. It's not that kind of curl. Lifting the beer can to your mouth.
I'm working on my six pack.
Now, more good news. This is good news about diabetes. So a newly developed technology platform, this is from gutnews.com. There's actually a website called gutnews.com. It's a scientific website that looks at all things gut-related. A newly developed technology platform has the potential to treat diseases like diabetes, IBS, and obesity by using enteroendocrine cells found in human intestinal cells. Now, they have a study here that they discuss. This is developed at Boston's Children's Hospital, and it shows how you can pinpoint drugs that can increase the amount of EEs. Now, EE is, again, the enteroendocrine cells. You can increase them, encourage them to generate more needed hormones. Together with the study's chief investigator, he's the chief of the Division of Endocrinology at Boston's Children's Hospital. He says this field is still in a nascent stage, but it's open to new avenues of discovery. They derive tissue from intestinal biopsies of patients at the Children's Hospital and from adult patients at Massachusetts General Hospital. Researchers then isolated the area between the intestinal villi, known as the valleys where intestinal cells can be found. Then organoids were created from the intestinal cells to replicate the biology of the duodenum and the rectum. The organoids were then used as a platform to test the effectiveness of various drugs. One of the doctors quoted says, "We tried a variety of small molecules with the goal of making more of these cells and more hormones, and they were successful." So what they're driving at is that this new treatment, if it is rolled out, it seems promising that it would be effective at helping people get past diabetes and other diseases that can be helped with this therapy.
This is all good information, but the story would be a lot more fun if you said diabetes like Wilford Brimley does.
Diabetes. Diabetes.
Diabetes. Diabetes. Diabetes. Diabetes.
Thank you, Wilford. Diabetes. Diabetes.
The doctor comes.
He's correcting us.
Right.
Diabetes. Diabetes.
No laughing matter. It's a serious.
If you look up Wilford Brimley, may he rest in peace. If you look up Wilford Brimley, you will find an incredible array of memes that related to diabetes.
I just found them. This is a gold mine.
They are funny. Also, an 11-year-old girl with Down syndrome, this is in the country of Macedonia, just north of Greece. 11-year-old girl, she has Down syndrome, and she was being bullied at school. So what happened? The president of the country, President Stevo Penderovsky, that'd be cool to have your actual first name is Stevo. So he held her hand and he walked her to school. Yeah, he walked her to school. Her name is Embla. That's awesome. She's experienced bullying at school as a result of having Down syndrome. Penderovsky, the president, talked to Embla's parents about the challenges she and her family face on a daily basis and discussed solutions. The president said that the behavior of those who endanger children's rights is unacceptable, especially when it comes to children with atypical development. He said they should not only enjoy the rights that they deserve, but also feel equal and welcome in the school desks, in the school, at their desks, and in the schoolyard. It is our obligation as a state, he said, but also as individuals. And the key element in this common mission is empathy. It will help children like Embla, but it will also help us learn from them how to sincerely rejoice and share and be in solidarity. In a video shared by the president's office, he can be seen sitting down with Embla's family and giving her gifts. He's also seen waving the 11-year-old off at the school gate as she walks to the building, and he walked her to school. He says, "We are all equal in society. I came here to give my support and to raise awareness that inclusion is a basic principle." Well, more power to him. That's pretty cool.
That's cool. I'll share. I'll get that up on Twitter right now.
And this, of course, is unlike Iceland and certain other countries where they abort any baby that is in the womb that is tested and found to have Down syndrome. They kill them before they're born. That's why there are no Down syndrome people in places like Iceland, because they're all killed ahead of time. And then you've got the president of Macedonia walking this 11-year-old girl who has Down syndrome to school. I see a big difference there. And I prefer the latter, don't you? I much prefer the latter. All right, fair enough.
All right, that's I was just getting that up on Twitter. It's there right now.
Thank you. I love stories like that. Let's go to Aaron in Phoenix. Good morning, Aaron.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are. Welcome.
I just have a couple quick questions for you regarding Bibles. Previously on your show, you had written two Bibles to somebody who was looking to read and learn more and understand the Bible. I thought that was the St. Ignatius Study Bible. I'd written them down. I lost my post-it note. I thought that was one, but I couldn't remember the second one.
Sure. Yeah, that was one. So the Ignatius Bible is the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition. And then the second one, almost certainly, that I mentioned was the Augustine Bible. And that is a different translation. It's also new from the original Greek and Hebrew. And it is a Catholic edition of the Bible that is available from, well, you can get it anywhere, but I believe in the U.S. it's published by the Augustine Institute, hence the title, the Augustine Bible. So those two are quite good. I have them both, and I've used them both. The Augustine Bible, I only got my first copy within the last couple of years, but the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition has been out for quite a long time. I also would recommend the Douay-Rheims Bible, which was the translation in English for the better part of 400 years. So English-speaking Bible readers who were Catholic would typically be reading the Douay-Rheims version of the Bible. Now, it does have the archaic spellings and a few other things, the these and the thous, if you don't mind that. But it's a very good Bible translation as well.
And that was...
Pardon me? I think Aaron's phone is acting up. So, Aaron, I hope that's helpful. I hope you're able to hear me, and I appreciate your phone call. Thank you. Let's go now to Mark in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about divorce. Mm-hmm. I know God hates divorce, but is there anything in the Bible where God says, I hate divorce, but in this circumstance... And then fill in the blank. I've had divorce in my family. And I guess I'm just kind of looking to see what are the circumstances where God would, not be okay with divorce, but,
Yeah, I understand. So in Matthew chapter 19, beginning with verse 1, Jesus actually talks about that very issue where he says to the Jews, he says, because of the hardness of your hearts, Moses permitted you to get divorced, but this was not always the case. And from the beginning, Jesus says, God made the male and female, and this is why a man leaves his parents and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh, and what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Those words are familiar to us from the wedding ceremony. So Jesus there identifies those instances in the Old Testament where God permitted divorce, but he did so even though that fell short of his ideal for human beings. So in terms of Jesus talking about it, that's where I would go. Now, the church recognizes that there are some circumstances where because of violence, for example, or a danger, some sort of moral turpitude or danger to the wife and or the children, that under some circumstances it is necessary for a divorce. And it's not the desired outcome, but it is sometimes necessary, especially for the safety of the wife and the children. So that would be a matter on a case-by-case basis where the church would give guidance. But as a general principle, the church, reflecting what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 19, would say that, you know, divorce is not something that any couple should be looking for or looking toward, but rather looking toward resolving whatever the issues were that would keep the couple together. So the church is a great champion of the validity of marriage and seeks to uphold that wherever possible. It's not always possible, but whenever it's possible, yeah, that's what the church opts for.
And unfaithfulness, is that a reason as well?
Well, you know, that's a topic worthy of discussion. So, Mark, if you don't mind holding, I will come back to your question on the other side of this quick timeout. I'll be right back. So stay right there, Mark, and we'll talk about that issue right after this.